Israel, the U.S., and other countries shot down hundreds of Iranian drones and missiles headed to Israel.
This was Iran's retaliation for an attack on its Syrian consulate. Has a wider Middle East war been avoided, or has it begun?
I'm Michelle Martin, that's Leila Fadel, and this is Up First from NPR News. American military support played a leading role in defending Israel.
Everything we're doing is trying to prevent a wider regional conflict, and there's certainly no reason in our view that it needs to become so.
Will that push Israel to let more humanitarian aid reach Gaza?
And Donald Trump goes on trial today, the first criminal trial ever for a former president.
I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth.
As jury selection gets underway, what questions will potential jurors be asked? Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Organic Valley, a co-op of small organic family farms. Farmer Tyler Webb shares why caring for his land has always been a priority.
I'd like to contribute to my community an array of ecosystem services beyond just milk. Building topsoil and holding on to water and supporting wildlife to build that resilience that will support, you know, generations to come.
Discover Organic Valley Dairy at ov.coop/ethically sourced.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, local amenities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon.
More than 300 Iranian drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles flew toward Israel Saturday, raising the specter of a wider conflict between Israel and Iran that could drag the U.S. into the fray.
The unprecedented strikes were in retaliation for an attack earlier this month that killed top Iranian officers at Iran's embassy compound in Syria, an attack attributed to Israel. Despite the scale of the attack, there was very little damage. Israel and the U.S., along with Great Britain, France, and Jordan, shot down nearly all of the missiles and drones, and Iran told the United Nations it considered the matter, quote-unquote, concluded, as long as there was no counterstrike.
To make sense of all this, we're joined now by NPR international correspondent Daniel Estrin in Tel Aviv and our national security correspondent Greg Myrie here in Washington. Good morning to you both.
Hi, Leila.
Good morning.
So, Daniel, let's start with you. Walk us through Iran's strikes and how this all unfolded.
Well, it began late Saturday night. Israel announced that Iran was firing drones toward Israel and that it would take hours for them to arrive. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed Israelis in a video statement. So he told Israelis, our defense systems are deployed. We are prepared for any scenario, both in defense and attack. And then several hours later, around 2 a.m., sirens started going off, 2 a.m. local time. They went off in Israel's north and the south. Even in Jerusalem, there were these bright orbs of light flying through the air above the Golden Dome of the Rock, you know, the holy site.
Yeah.
There were booms of interceptions. There was the rumble of fighter jets in the skies. And Israeli fighter pilots who have been speaking on Israeli army radio have said that they never imagined or even drilled for such a massive attack in terms of the number of projectiles at the same time. 99% of them, Israeli officials say, were either fell short or were intercepted midair.
Greg, now several other countries also took part in this shootout. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Leila, the overall tally is really quite remarkable. Altogether, we're talking about 9 countries involved in some form. Iran fired from its homeland, but it also fired from positions in Iraq and Syria. The Houthis in Yemen launched attacks, so Israel was facing incoming airstrikes from 4 separate countries. Israel, as Daniel just mentioned, shot down most of this fire, but the U.S. took part from Navy ships in the Mediterranean and the Red Sea. Jordan shot down some of the drones. It said not to protect Israel, but to defend its own airspace. And Britain and France also shot down drones. So five countries were involved in shooting down the Iranian drones and missiles. Perhaps most remarkably, there's been no reports of anyone killed, just a couple injuries.
Now, Daniel, even though the damage was limited, people across the region really weren't sleeping this weekend. What did Iran have to say about the attack?
Well, Iran says that it was exercising legitimate defense. It was responding to the Israeli attack on the Iranian diplomatic compound in Damascus. And the way that Israeli analysts explain that Israeli attack is that, you know, during the Gaza war, Iran has been fueling, you know, 6 months of attacks on Israel through its proxies in Lebanon and Yemen. And Israel here wanted to deliver a strong response, only Israel apparently did not expect Iran to respond the way that it did. Now, Iran was also sending many messages here. Iran says it gave other countries 72 hours notice of these strikes and also told the U.S. through other countries that it did not intend to strike U.S. targets or military bases. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, spoke yesterday through an interpreter. Here's what he said.
We told them that our target in this defense is simply to attack the Israeli targets.
So Iran signaling it does not want this to escalate further. You know, even before the missiles reached Israel, Iran's mission to the UN tweeted, as Michelle mentioned earlier, this matter can be deemed concluded. It warned Israel not to respond, and it said the U.S. must stay away.
Now, the U.S. said it would not participate in any retaliatory attacks, but Greg, it was very much involved in Israel's defense over the weekend, right?
Oh, absolutely. The U.S. and Israel and other partners were closely coordinating air defense plans. They had about 10 days to get ready for this because it was pretty well telegraphed and they knew it was coming. Still, a U.S. official who briefed reporters, he described the Iranian barrage as being very much at the high end of what they had anticipated. And he also described this very tense moment when all these Iranian weapons were bearing down on Israel, including more than 100 ballistic missiles, all in the air at the same time within a few minutes of Israel. And as we noted, the U.S. Participated from Navy ships in the Mediterranean and Red Sea. Here's John Kirby, a National Security Council spokesman, talking about the shooting on Weekend Edition Sunday.
It proved the superiority of the Israeli Defense Forces. It proved the military superiority of the United States and our other partners that participated in this. That was just an incredible success.
Now, Greg, President Biden spoke to Prime Minister Netanyahu right after the Iranian airstrikes. What was the president's message?
Yeah, according to U.S. officials, President Biden urged Netanyahu to proceed now with caution. He told the Israeli leader that the U.S. will provide ironclad support to help Israel defend itself, but the U.S. is not going to take part in offensive operations against Iran. U.S. officials said Biden is not telling Israel what it should or shouldn't do, but clearly the U.S. would prefer Israel to see this as a very successful operation, proof that Israel, with help from the U.S. and others, can defend itself and should consider the path of de-escalation. And it's in keeping with Biden's stance since the Israel-Hamas war erupted in October. Again, here's Admiral John Kirby.
Everything we're doing is trying to prevent a wider regional conflict, and there's certainly no reason in our view that it needs to become so.
Okay, but I want to understand what Israeli leadership is thinking, Daniel. What are the options they're weighing after this attack?
Israel's Security Cabinet is debating this very issue. An Israeli official told me this morning that everyone in the government in Israel believes that Israel has to respond somehow, because this is not the shadow war anymore, Leila. This is not Iran hiding behind proxy groups in Yemen or Lebanon. This was a first ever declared attack launched from Iran directly toward Israel. It's an escalation in Israel's eyes. And so the Israeli official I spoke to says the question is how Israel is going to respond. Some want a military response, a strong one. Others see this as an opportunity for diplomacy to build a strategic alliance in the region, maybe even to end the war in Gaza, establish ties with Saudi Arabia, and that would be a deterrent against Iran in the long term.
And Greg, Biden and Netanyahu had a tense phone call less than 2 weeks ago now over the deaths of civilians and aid workers in Gaza. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, well, this weekend was a moment of close Israeli-U.S. cooperation. They can both view it as a success. So one would assume it's improved the atmosphere. But now there's the question of what will Israel do next toward Iran and in Gaza? The U.S. says Israel doesn't have to hit back at Iran, or as one U.S. official put it, the Americans don't want to see this run up the escalation ladder. And in Gaza, the U.S. still wants to see an easing of the humanitarian crisis there. Israel did respond to Biden's previous phone call about 11 days ago or so. It is allowing more aid in, and we'll be watching very closely to see if this improves conditions for Palestinians there.
And Daniel, you described this pretty frightening Saturday night, Sunday morning. What's Tel Aviv like now?
It's really almost back to normal. Israel has lifted all the restrictions it had imposed on school outings and big gatherings. And many people are, I think, just feeling a sense of relief. It's remarkable that the missiles were intercepted so successfully, that Israel hasn't immediately responded, and we are not engulfed in a wider regional war today.
NPR's Daniel Estrin in Tel Aviv and Greg Myrie in Washington. Thanks to you both.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Leila.
For the first time in American history, a former president is going on trial as a criminal defendant.
Jury selection starts today in the case involving Donald Trump, his longtime fixer Michael Cohen, and adult film star Stormy Daniels. Trump is facing 34 felony charges in a Manhattan courtroom for falsifying business records. He has pleaded not guilty to all of them, and on Friday, he said he'll take the stand.
I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth. And the truth is that there's no case. They have no case.
NPR's Andrea Bernstein is with us now with a preview. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning.
So Donald Trump has lost three civil cases in New York over the past year, but this is the first trial that could result in prison time, at least hypothetically. So what are prosecutors alleging here?
This all traces back to the end of the 2016 campaign, when Trump's attorney at the time, Michael Cohen, wrote up an agreement to prevent Stormy Daniels from speaking about an alleged affair with Trump. Cohen paid her $130,000 out of his own pocket. The criminal charges stem from how Donald Trump reimbursed Cohen, that is, for a so-called legal retainer when there was no legal retainer. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg says the false records were kept to cover up Trump and Cohen's attempts to change the outcome of the 2016 election.
Now, Trump has managed to delay each of his other three criminal trials. Why is this one going forward now?
Oh, he has delayed this one, too. The investigation started while he was president, but Trump's lawyers argued he was immune from criminal investigation. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, twice, actually, before the investigation resumed and ultimately resulted in indictment a year ago. Even after the judge in the case, Juan Merchan, told Trump's lawyers just 3 weeks ago, in effect, do not bring me last-minute frivolous motions, Trump tried and failed three times just last week to delay the case even more.
And I think people may remember that Trump has faced a lot of gag orders in his various trials. What about here?
Also here, Judge Merchan recently added a provision that says Trump cannot disparage family members of the parties and witnesses for fear that could discourage people from testifying truthfully. Merchan wrote earlier this month, the threat is very real. The judicial system could be undermined.
Okay, so the first step in any criminal trial is jury selection. How does this process work, or how's it going to work in such a high-profile case?
So there will be a lot of potential jurors in the courtroom today. They'll be asked to respond to a series of questions. They will not be asked, who are you going to vote for in 2024? But they can be questioned on whether they or someone they're close to has worked or volunteered for or against Trump, whether they're a member of QAnon, the Oath Keepers, Antifa, or other extremist groups. And they can be asked whether they have such strong feelings about Trump they can't be fair and impartial.
Is there a sense that it's going to be hard to find jurors who can be fair and impartial, given that he is so famous?
I mean, it seems impossible, but I've now covered three jury trials involving Trump or his business in New York. And at the end of the day, each of them has ended up with a jury. In this case, it's expected to take about 2 weeks.
The jury selection is going to take 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then the trial itself?
The parties say about 6 to 8 weeks. Trump will be in court 4 days a week from now until jurors determine whether, beyond any reasonable doubt, he committed these 34 felonies.
That is NPR's Andrea Bernstein. Andrea, thank you.
Thank you.
And as the case moves forward, you can follow along each day on our Trump Trials podcast, starting with today's jury selection. How do jurors get picked in a case where the defendant is a former president? Listen later today. And that's up first for Monday, April 15th. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Our new election year series, We the Voters, starts today. NPR is taking a closer look at issues at the forefront of American life.
This week, we report from Pennsylvania on gun violence. In Philadelphia, nearly 2,000 people lost their lives to violence over the past 4 years. The overwhelming majority of cases involved a firearm.
You don't understand their pain until you're in their shoes.
How a major American city tries to end the cycle of violence on today's Morning Edition. Listen to your local NPR station or find our coverage on the NPR app.
Today's episode of Up First was edited by Mark Katkoff, Andrew Sussman, Dana Farrington, Lisa Thompson, and Ben Adler. It was produced by Ziad Butch, Ben Abrams, and Nina Kravinsky. We get engineering support from Phil Edfors, and our technical director is Zach Coleman. Start your day here with us tomorrow.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR. This advertisement comes from our paid sponsor, Fundrise. High interest rates mean that real estate assets are available at a discount compared to previous valuations. The Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to expand its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. Add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio at fundrise.com/NPR. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund before investing. Read the prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship.